324-0047, Sean Anderson as trustee of the Mark L. Anderson Revocable Trust Appellant versus Daniel Kamide and Anna Kamide Appellees.
Mr. Sherman, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Edward Sherman. I represent Sean Anderson in her role as trustee of the Mark L. Anderson Revocable Trust, dated November 19, 1994. The issue in this appeal is simply one, is whether or not the trial court abused its discretion in entering a stay of all collection proceedings before the trial court until a resolution of two foreclosure cases that are pending in Cook and DuPage County. I submit to the court that respectfully, the trial court did abuse its discretion, considering this court's prior case of Silver Cross versus Campbell, in which this court stated the election of method of enforcing judgments, except in small claims cases, is vested in the judgment creditor. And I submit that the trial court, by doing a general stay of all the collection proceedings before until the resolution of those foreclosure cases, violates the principle of this court and pronounced in Silver Cross versus Campbell. I'm not trying here to say that the trial court does not have the ability to control its proceedings. I'm not saying the trial court doesn't have situations where it cannot put a stay in place. I believe those are within the trial court's discretion, but to essentially prohibit or bar the judgment creditor from proceeding until other collection devices are resolved, I think does violate this court's decision and is an abuse of discretion. With respect to reasons, you know, certain situations where the court can do it, you know, if there, for example, was a situation where you're harassing a judgment debtor, a third party creditor, a third party, you know, citation respondent, the court can take actions to stop that. If the court in this case wanted to do a very short stay to try to figure out the confusion the court seemed to have regarding the correct judgment amount, you know, I understand that in certain situations that could be appropriate as well. But to basically stay the entire proceedings until two other proceedings, which are going to, at a minimum, take 7 months, if not longer, to resolve, I think is an abuse of discretion.
Counsel, I want to make it, I just want to make it clear, and I'm not sure, I want to make sure clear for the record that the collection proceeding, there was a judgment that was obtained in Wisconsin, and it doesn't have anything to do with the foreclosure actions that are pending in Chicago and DuPage. Or are they in any way related to those foreclosure actions?
Sure, I can address that, Your Honor. So there was a Wisconsin judgment. The Wisconsin judgment I domesticated in DuPage County. And then after I domesticated that in DuPage County, apart from the collection proceedings in DuPage County, I filed a foreclosure proceeding in Cook County against property owned by the judgment debtors, and I filed a foreclosure case in DuPage County against property owned by the judgment debtors based on this judgment amount. So I domesticated it or registered it in DuPage County, and when I registered in DuPage County, I sought the collection proceedings before the trial court that's the matter on appeal here, and then I also simultaneously filed foreclosure actions against property that the judgment debtors own in Cook and DuPage County.
Okay.
Okay. As far as overall, you know, discretion, the trial court, I know, also had some concerns about what the correct judgment amount was. And with respect to that, the original registered amount we had set forth in my brief here was the amount including interest over the years under Wisconsin law of $320,915.23. Eventually, we did other things as well, including wage deductions. We did another citation. And what happened is over time, those amounts, of course, rose after the initial filing in DuPage County, because post-judgment interest on a judgment of $320,000 raised that as well. And so I understand the trial court was confused about the amounts, but one of two things that could have been done instead of staying until all the foreclosure proceedings are done is either A, ask for supplemental briefings of the parties, or B, you know, the trial court had no problem with, at that point in time, $190,000 judgment to allow enforcement of that. But something short of waiting 7 months to a year and requiring other proceedings to go forward, I think is essentially a violative of this court's pronouncement in Silver Cross versus Campbell. And so I think that if the trial court had done something else, instead of making my client wait until those are resolved, then obviously we'd be in a different situation. It'd be more of the traditional, you know, abuse of process with the court had the basis for, was there a rational basis and things of that nature. But my client's main concern is the fact that we have the requirement by the trial court to wait until those are resolved. I do believe that Mr. Kamaid addressed in his appeal discretion. He cited some cases involving post-judgment proceedings as well, but none of them involved the situation of all that we have here in Silver Cross versus Campbell. They dealt with some general perspectives, but they did not actually address the issue here about the judgment creditor's discretion. And so, for example, Midwest Commercial Funding versus Kelly, the issue in that case was actually whether a judgment creditor may perfect service of citation to discover assets by email. That's not the issue we have here. First National Bank of Gibson City versus Whistlemailer, if I pronounce it wrong, I apologize. That involved the denial of a motion to quash and denial of a motion to vacate. And so I really think that the cases he cited, I understand that for some general principles, aren't on point. And I think Silver Cross versus Campbell is directly on point with the situation, in that I think that the stay in a collection proceeding until you have other potential collection proceedings resolved does violate what this court has pronounced previously. And it also hampers a judgment creditor for proceeding to their detriment. I also cited 5-2-1402G. I understand that that provision talks about proceeding consecutively or concurrently with judgment proceedings. And I understand it only relates to citation proceedings. By just pointing this additional basis or argument for the court as to the fact that we can respectfully walk and chew gum at the same time on this. And I think that allowing the judgment creditor to proceed multiple avenues is what's intended by not only that code, but this court's pronouncement. And I think that that should continue to be the way that things are done, because otherwise we can have a bunch of freeze ups here that, you know, if a trial court decides to freeze for another situation where say, hey, we're not going to let you do X till Y is completed, that hampers the judgment creditor from reaching relief.
Can you address the issues of attorney's fees and interest?
Yes. With respect to that, are you talking about with respect to the actual trial court's decision on the stay or something else?
Yes, I'm talking about the decision on the stay.
Okay. So we originally had a judgment amount of interest. We had a judgment from Wisconsin of $190,595.70. And under Wisconsin law, there is a provision there for interest that allows for it to accumulate post-judgment, and I think certain percentages there. And so I used those to calculate what the amount would be on the date that we registered the judgment in DuPage County. And that's how we came up with the amount of $320,915.23, I believe. Apart from that, I don't believe, you know, after it's in DuPage County, there's anything with respect to attorney's fees and interest. There might be something in the underlying judgment that Your Honor wants me to address that I might not.
But didn't the trial court say he had concerns because the judgment included attorney's fees and interest and he wasn't sure he could collect that?
Yes. The trial court did say he was concerned about the $190,000 being the correct amount, Your Honor. And since that, we have had further proceedings in that, which respectfully may become another appeal down the road on it. But yeah, I understand the trial court did have a concern at the time. That's part of the record on the appeal, is whether that is the correct amount. And so my client's position is that if that's the case, then we can have either supplemental hearing on it. Maybe he could limit what could be done for a time. But my main point, Your Honor, is that we don't just use that as that position to say, okay, we're going to wait till two other proceedings are done, which are essentially seeking to collect the same amount. That's my point on that. So what I'm asking respectfully from this court is to respectfully reverse the trial court stay and instruct the trial court to have, if any further proceedings this court deems necessary with respect to any confusion on numbers, interest, or whatnot, but to find that basically having a stay saying that if you're doing a post-judgment collection that allows you to stay until the resolution of other collection proceedings, to find that that was improper. No, that's all I have at this time. Thank you.
Any questions?
There's other questions.
I have none.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sherman. You'll have time in reply. Mr. DeWald, you may respond.
It please the court, Mr. Sherman. Citations to discover assets are discovery, as I cite in my response brief. And discovery of assets is a discovery tool which the court can manage its calendar and manage discovery. And that's what Judge McJoint is doing here. He's managing the discovery. Because all these citations have been issued and answered, and we are dealing with the citations, and then Judge McJoint learns of the foreclosure actions, Judge McJoint wanted to stay the citation proceedings here because of his concern that the certificates signed by Mr. Sherman and Mr. Sherman's office don't show the judgment amount. It shows the judgment amount plus interest. And that was the confusion. And as such, Judge McJoint said, well, I'm going to stay in these proceedings while you go and try to collect on your money in front of the other courts. As I put in my response, it's confusing because the plaintiff has now sought to stay actions in the foreclosure cases. So I'm not sure what the plaintiff is doing here, but Judge McJoint has a big latitude, discretion to manage his calendar, especially with respect to discovery. And respectfully, we believe that the stay should stay in place.
Any questions for Mr. DeWald?
No.
No? You've concluded, Mr. DeWald? Yes.
Yes, I just, if you look at the only thing I want to add, if you look at the record that I cited in my response, like SR7 and SR9, you'll see that it just has the blanket number, balance due judgment. Judgment is 320. Doesn't say judgment is 190. Doesn't identify the interest. And there's been no attempt to clarify that in any other pleading in the lower court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeWald. Mr. Sherman, you may reply.
Sure. Thank you. With respect to Mr. DeWald's last statement about the citations himself, if you look at the record at one, as supporting record one and two, which were the original ones filed in DuPage County, there's an identification of the $190,595.70 on page one in the supporting record, followed by on page two, the calculation of the post-judgment interest that gets to the $320,915.23. And that was part of the original filing in DuPage before all these collection proceedings occurred. And then we use that $320,915.23 going forward, because that is the judgment amount as of the date it is registered, is what our position was. And so that is in response to Mr. DeWald on that issue. As far as the foreclosure cases stayed in Cook and DuPage County, and I apologize if a little bit, I believe it's within the record, but what happened is after Judge McJoint made his original pronouncement, not just about the stay, but the judgment amount, Mr. DeWald's client filed motions to dismiss in the Cook and DuPage County foreclosure cases, making similar arguments that were before Judge McJoint. And the reason we filed a motion to stay those is to avoid the possibility of multiplicity of proceedings where the judgment amount and the validity of the judgment that led to these proceedings would result in multiple and separate appeals. And so the reason why my client moved to stay those proceedings is to avoid the possibility of inconsistent judgments, to address Mr. DeWald's point in that respect. Because Judge McJoint, in this case, determined, and it's part of the record, that the judgment amount he felt was proper was $190,595.70 at the time that we brought this appeal. There are other proceedings that aren't part of the record, so I don't want to discuss those, but that was different than what the original amount set forth was. And the question is, would the Cook and DuPage County cases come to different conclusions on that or other issues that were raised in general regarding the validity of the underlying judgment? And so the reason why my client moved to stay those is to avoid multiplicity and possibility of inconsistent decisions that would both be appealed to this court and the Cook County Circuit of the First District, just to answer that issue. As far as the idea and the concept of a discovery tool, I do not dispute with Mr. DeWald that a trial court has the ability to manage its calendar. My only dispute, and Mr. DeWald has not addressed it today, is the fact that you can't, that this court's pronouncement in Silver Cross versus Campbell is that it is the judgment creditor's discretion, as this court has said before, to decide how he or she wants to proceed. And if the trial court says, basically, I'm making that decision for you because you need to finish these foreclosure proceedings before you can proceed here, I think that violates the principles and the pronouncement of that case.
Counsel, does 735, does section 12654 of the Code of Civil Procedure play in here where it defines when a foreign judgment may be stayed? Does that have any role in these proceedings?
Your Honor, I respectfully, I don't think that was addressed by the parties in their arguments, and I would need to take a look and see.
Okay.
As far as when it can be stayed, I'm talking generally speaking from collection. Obviously, with respect to staying a judgment in general as to what you can do with it, I'd have to look. I believe there are four or five principles for objecting to a registered foreign judgment, which I don't, it might be the subject of a later appeal, but not necessarily this one.
Okay.
The main purpose is Silver Cross versus Campbell in this proceeding. If necessary, I could provide a supplemental brief if Your Honor would like, but I do not have.
No, I don't need them.
Okay. Anything else?
You've concluded, Mr. Sherman?
I have, barring any questions by the panel.
Okay. Any questions?
No.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter this morning. It will be taken under advisement. A written disposition shall issue.